Hello, my name is Mike Diedrich, and this is a presentation of Veterans for Peace radio show presented by Veterans for Peace Chapter 92, Daniel Ellsberg, Chapter 92, Seattle. And this is a introduction to the Veterans for Peace meeting that we had. That was a presentation of the Save Our VA by Bruce Carruthers, Allison Herm, and Jeff Roy on our regular second Saturday meeting on 8 March. So this is presented by on KODX 96.9 FM and is archived there. This is also will be presented on KO on our VIP 92, but also this will be it's such an important information about saving our VA and the information presented by these three people here in the question and answers that are a part of this presentation that the it deserves as much audience as possible. So this will serve as an introduction to the pre-recorded presentation. So thanks to the people that are making this presentation. And let's hear the presentation by the Save Our VA staff. Thank you.
My name is Jeff Roy. I served in Vietnam in 69, and I was in the U.S. Marine Corps up in the DMZ and over by Laos as well. I'm the coordinator of this national campaign of Save Our VA, that a project of Vets for Peace. We've been around in one iteration or another since about 2014, but really we got moving in about 2018. And we've been, and one of the things other than trying to get the word out about the importance of saving the VA from understaffing and the privatization effort to send more veterans to the private sector care, which studies show is not as good. So we are, the three of us are three of the key people on the steering committee that carry this weight. And we love the work, but it is, I gotta say, it's a lot of work. And so we've been to Washington, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Arliss, but I think it's three times and no, two times. And we're going to be going again this late April to sit down with congressional members, but often their key staff instead on the House Veterans Affairs Committee and the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. Let me turn this over briefly to Bruce and Arliss to introduce themselves. Arliss?
Yeah, Jeff, can you say where you're at and what your VFP chapter is?
Oh, it's chapter 27, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, thank you.
Arliss? You must be muted, Arliss.
Sorry, did you call me? I had some background noise.
Yes, just to introduce yourself.
My name is Arliss Herem. I'm also in Minneapolis for Chapter 27. I was Army Nurse Corps 70-75, including a tour in Vietnam, and became involved with SOVA nationally in 2020 after a DC conference. Bruce?
I'm Bruce Carruthers. I'm also an Army Vietnam veteran, a retired VA employee. I worked for the VA for 30 years, besides being on the Silva Steering Committee, I'm also president of Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute, and my chapter is 099 Western North Carolina. I live just outside of Asheville, North Carolina.
Well, we are going to eventually move into a presentation, an overview of veterans community care by Bruce. But just FYI, if you have questions, put them into chat, and eventually I'll look at them, consolidate where necessary, and then we will respond to them. Bruce?
Well, I want to give a brief overview of the Veterans Community Care Program, or what is outsourcing veterans to the private sector. There's a lot of information about it. In a few minutes, I'll try to cover the highlights. One thing that's happened is both with regards to the percent of funds that are now spent on this community care program and the number of patients referred to that, they're both at about 40%. That is about 40% of the veterans' healthcare budget is spent on community care, and about 40% of veterans now receive care in the community as opposed to receiving it in the VA. There are a lot of problems with the community care program. One of them is the lack of oversight. That includes oversight of the quality of care, the cost of care, whether it's timely provided or not, credentialing of providers in the community care program, and reviews by the Inspector General. Let me just give you one example. The Assistant Inspector General testified before Congress, I think the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and seemed to be proud that they had conducted 20 reviews of the community care program in 2024. But she didn't mention they conducted 120 reviews of VA facilities. She also didn't mention that most of these reviews, the 20-some reviews they conducted of the community care program, were on how well the VA administered the program. They were not on the quality of care in the community care program, timeliness, or cost. So we have stressed, and we will again, that if 40% of care is provided in the community, 40% of IG reviews ought to be in the community, and it ought to be on quality, timeliness, credentialing of providers in the community. Another issue with that is there's a real issue with the community care providers not reporting back medical information to the VA. A person is referred out to the community. The community care providers are supposed to send medical information back so it can be documented in the veteran's record. That often doesn't happen. And what the IG has said when they find that is it's the VA's responsibility to follow up on this. There are never any recommendations for any sanctions to be applied to the community care providers or these third-party administrators like TriWest, who make billions of dollars on these contracts to insist that their providers return information. There's also a lack of training. Training for community care providers on issues that are specific to veterans, PTSD, exposure to Agent Orange, military sexual trauma, burn pits, traumatic brain injury. They're not required to take the training, and most of them don't. And there's no penalty for not doing that. There was some legislation introduced that would give them a financial incentive to take the training. Our position was if they don't want to be trained on veterans' issues, they shouldn't be treating veterans. But right now, nobody in the VA seems to be willing to do that. And I think under the current administration, it's very unlikely any pressure will be put on them. Another issue that's been identified by only a couple of studies, because the IG doesn't do many studies, the Congressional Budget Office has, and the Congressional Accountability Office. In those few studies, they found that when a veteran is referred to the community care, it's very likely that unnecessary or very expensive prescriptions will be written for them, and the tests that are not necessary will be ordered for them. So, if you know anything about the private sector, it's profit driven. And what often happens is they have expensive equipment, an MRI, a PET scan, something else. They have to use that a certain amount to make the expense worthwhile. So, there's a lot of pressure on providers to have tests done, which may or may not be necessary. One of the key studies had to do with treatment of veterans with low-risk prostate cancer. And the study found that they were much more likely to be subject to diagnostic tests and procedures that were unnecessary. For low-level risk, the standard now is active surveillance, that is to follow them with regular PSAs or biopsies if necessary, and only to intervene if it's appropriate. But they found these private providers were, in fact, intervening at times that weren't appropriate, that didn't meet the standard of care. Of course, it generated more income for the private sector. Another thing we often hear is veterans want private care, veterans want choice, that the VA is discriminating against them or making life difficult for them by not giving them choice. The surveys that we see, surveys conducted by the VA and conducted by veteran service organizations, show that 90 plus percent of veterans are satisfied with VA care and prefer to get their VA care there. So it's not a matter of veterans really wanting to get care in the private sector. And what will happen is if this outsourcing continues, there won't really be a choice. There's only a choice if a veteran has a choice of going to the VA or going someplace else. If VA services are continue to be curtailed the way they have been, a veteran who wants to go to the VA, and I get my health care at the VA Asheville, I've been extremely satisfied with the care I get there. If the VA Asheville keeps ratcheting down the service they can provide, even if I want to go to the VA there, I won't. It often happens when you call the VA, the first thing you hear is you want to hear about the Mission Act and care in the community. The Mission Act was supposed to be applied only when the VA couldn't provide services or they couldn't provide it in a timely fashion or the distance for the VA to drive, a veteran to drive was too great for he or she to go to the VA. Now it's gotten to the point where more and more the pressure is that a veteran will just go to the private sector no matter the capability of the VA. And let me give you one example of how unlevel the playing field is. If a veteran is referred to community care, that provider can count telehealth visits as meeting timely standards. The former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, McDonough, while it was not required in law, issued a regulation that the VA could not count telehealth visits towards meeting timely standards. Surveys have shown that many veterans prefer telehealth visits. So, why do they? Well, because they don't have to travel, they have to take time off for work. They don't have to make daycare arrangements. And for some things, like mental health visits and other things, telehealth is very popular, and the VA is a leader in telehealth. There's currently legislation passing which by law would prevent the VA from considering telehealth visits, but allows the private sector to consider that. And once you get into the private sector, there's no control over time unless you're being referred to somebody else. And in fact, studies show that often you can't get a timely referral to the private sector. So it's not just a matter of veterans' choice, it's a matter of pushing veterans to the private sector all the time, making it difficult to get VA care. Another thing that showed the quality of VA care, in 2024, Medicare does annual surveys of satisfaction with patient care. And they survey VA hospitals and they survey private hospitals. The 2024 survey showed that 79% of VA facilities received a summary star rating of 4 or 5 stars, compared to only 40% of non-VA hospitals. Patient satisfaction with VA hospitals in terms of the care they got, timeliness of care, and their contact with providers was considerably higher than it was in the private sector. And then there are numerous studies, and if you go to the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute and you look under, I think it's Our Work, you can find a list of these studies. There are numerous studies every year that show VA care is equal to and often superior to private sector care. It's more cost effective and it's more timely. So all the evidence really points to the fact that the VA provides high quality care, provides it in a holistic fashion. That is, you know, if you've had experience in the private sector, it's very fragmented. You see your primary care provider, he or she refers you to a specialist. There's no coordination between the two of them. You might go back to your primary care provider, then you see a different specialist for another condition. There's no coordination between those two specialists or your primary care provider. In the VA, you have a treatment team, and the primary care provider controls your care, and everybody knows about it. There's an electronic medical record, so every provider can see exactly what has happened to you in the VA, no matter what VA you go to in the country. That's not true in the private sector. And many of you, I'm sure, before my service-connected level was high enough to receive all the care I needed at the VA, I had a lot of care in the private sector, so I had a fair amount of experience with it. What our fear is, and what I think is going to happen if this privatization is not halted and reversed, is the VA is going to become like an insurance company. It's not going to become a provider of care. And that's what a lot of Republicans would like. They would like the VA to provide maybe some basic level of primary care, but all specialty care would be handled in the private sector. And specialty care is where the money is, not in primary care. And the kind of tests that you can order, the kind of procedures that can be done. So the VA would just pay private care providers to do this, and it would be essentially an insurance company. So there are two real disadvantages of that. I think we all know that overhead in the private sector is 15 to 20%. That means they call it overhead, it's 15 to 20% profit. In the VA and in programs like Medicare, the overhead is about 4%. So between 4% and 15 or 20% is just profit. So the cost will go up. And my own feeling is eventually what will happen is first, VA care will be like Medicare, where you refer to Medicare doctors. But as the cost goes up, VA will be like Medicaid, which is a different program. And if you have any idea of how Medicaid works in many places, only the doctors who are not at a very high level will take Medicaid patients because reimbursement is so low. You're lucky to get in to see a doctor and you don't see top quality doctors and you have very little choice about who you see. One more point on this privatization. I worked for the VA for 30 years in 10 different locations, half of my career in human resources and half in hospital management. The VA has always used outside sources. They did it in a couple of ways. So one of the hospitals I worked at was in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is essentially a small community hospital. And it didn't make sense for that hospital to hire all the specialists that needed. So we had specialists on what's called fee basis. They would come to the hospital certain times during the week, and we would pay them on a fee basis, and they would see patients. They weren't VA employees, but they saw VA employees in the VA hospital. Or for things like PET scan, for example, that's a very expensive piece of equipment. And it wouldn't make any sense for a small hospital like Erie to have a PET scan. So we would contract with the larger hospitals in the city. And if a patient needed a PET scan, we would send that patient to the hospital in the city. They'd get the PET scan, but the information would come back to a VA doctor and treatment would be ordered by the VA doctor, even if that treatment was needed outside of the VA. My point here is under the old system, the VA kept control of the patient. It was able to monitor what was happening. It was able to review quality and timeliness. Under the new system, a patient is referred to the private sector. They're often lost. They're not returned to the VA because they're profit-generating people. And there is a study called the Red Team Report, and that was by Dr. Kaiser, who used to be the Undersecretary for Health, and other people. And that's one of the things they found was the VA could save a lot of money if patients were returned to the VA. Now, there's a lot more about privatization, but that is kind of an overview. But I encourage you to look at the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute. I'll put that in the chat. It has the most updated information on what is occurring in the VA and what's happening with privatization. If you have questions, I'll be try to happy to field those during the question and answer period. But I want to turn it over to Arliss now.
I think this invitation came about because of what's going on right now, and most I can say it is a mess. The staffing, which has always been a critical issue at the VA, it's been understaffed. The PACT Act last year increased patient population. VA did hire more staff to try to meet those needs. And those people are now being cut from the staff. I think it's all started with getting rid of probationary employees, which I think a lot of you have heard about. We don't really know the number of people who've been dismissed and that exempted clinical positions, but support staff are necessary to run services. You can't run facilities without janitors, without dietary. And the Veterans Crisis call line was also affected with people being dismissed from there. And that was the first round of decreasing staff. Then a reduction in force came down on February 26th, and reports are anywhere from 73,000 to 80,000 staff are going to be laid off. Again, Collins keeps saying this is not going to impact, this is going to improve patient care. I'm not sure how it can improve patient care when you're cutting staff, when you have an increased patient load, but that's what he keeps assuring people. I don't know if anybody else saw PBS the other night and they interviewed Collins. And he was just, to me, absolutely rude to two veterans that they had who were raising issues. He just poo-pooed what they had to say. I didn't have a favorable impression of him before, and it's even less now. So staffing is a very big issue. It's also research is being impacted. The VA has four missions, and research is one of them. And few people know about it, but VA research has benefited all people in America and around the world. The shingles vaccine, the nicotine patch, cardiac pacemakers, and needless to say, lots and lots in high-level prosthetics for amputees, spinal cord, etc. Funding cuts have come for VA research also, and as well as NIH research. There may be 370 studies being affecting up to 10,000 veterans, and some of them are receiving top-line experimental therapies for such things as ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease, for multiple sclerosis, cancer patients, and others. And I don't know who in here might be participating in the Million Vets program. Anybody? We don't know what that's going to happen either. The Million Vet program has now over a million vets who they gave a specimen, so their genes are available and are being studied for just all kinds of stuff. It's a huge database, over a million people, and more diverse in terms of sex and ethnicity, race than most other populations and a long-term population. It's really an incredible resource, and how that might be threatened, we don't really know yet. Bruce was referring to what the long-term outcome for the VA might be. And we haven't seen how they're going to implement it yet, but Project 2025 and Concerned Veterans of America have talked about needing to review veterans' benefits applications to decrease standards, for one thing, and review current beneficiaries because of the high level of fraud going on for veterans receiving benefits. Their aim is for the VA to provide care really for only for direct service-connected physical disabilities. So things like PTSD, military sexual trauma, moral injury, those things really be discounted and removed from long-term benefits. Things change daily, hourly, just about. It's really hard right now to keep track of what all is going on. We're getting response. AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, are reacting. Other people are reacting. And we really do need to try to take advantage of this energy that's out there right now to mobilize. You're looking at most of SOVA right now, the three of us, and we're feeling a little bit overwhelmed at this point. It's a lot to keep track of and a lot to try to figure out how to respond when, where. So we are looking for help. And maybe Jeff, you can talk a little bit more about that. Yep.
And I certainly can. Thank you, Arliss.
Jeff, can I add one point to Arliss's?
Sure, go ahead.
So when Arliss talked about this review of veterans' benefits for service connections, one of the things that is under consideration, if you look at 2024, only things that can be proven to be related to military service, for example, an injury, a gunshot wound, or a helicopter crash, something was an injury. So things like exposure to Agent Orange, toxic burn pits, and the like, all those things could be on the table. And so the things where it's presumed that your condition is related to your time in the service are the kind of things they're talking about eliminating, which would really reduce the size of benefits. And that has an effect not only in the payments, but your access to VA health care.
That and if veterans aren't being cared for within the VA system, future problems will never be identified. The VA has the data that lets us know what the outcomes for Agent Orange, what the outcomes for burn pits, now traumatic brain injuries, and in the future, Lord knows what. But if the VA's healthcare system is not existing to take care of veterans, that information is never going to be found, and veterans will not be impossible for them to get any benefits, get any care for what's needed.
Thank you, Bruce. We'll take questions in chat. I did put in a link to the SOVA website, by the way, in the chat. We encourage you, if you haven't already, encourage you to sign up at that link for our monthly updates as to what's going on. And with those updates, typically we have a call to action letter that's focused on either a Senate or congressional legislation dealing with veterans. And if you when you read that letter on specific legislation, if it makes sense to you, you can just add your name to that and click on it, and it'll go directly to either your congressional senator, representative, or both, depending on the legislation. Excuse me. And so, and Bruce has put in earlier the link to VHPI. And VA champion, yes, did you, Bruce?
I'm going to put champion now.
Okay, good enough. So we encourage you with the information you have now, and of course your own information even before this presentation. We encourage you to continue to contact your members of Congress. If you haven't been doing it, please, we encourage you definitely to do that. We encourage local chapters to pressure national offices to support the VA. And so if you're a member of some other VSO, please work locally. Nationally, regionally, whatever, to get the VSO to provide to increase pressure on Congress and to support the VHA. Other allies that work with us, Common Defense, Vote Vets. And if you have the opportunity, and inclination, please do write letters to the editor, to local news papers and news outlets, etc. Okay, at this point, are
Can
there
I just add a
any?
couple of things, Jeff?
Of course.
One, it's probably most of you are aware, but Patty Murray is on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. You don't have anybody in the House, but you do have her on the Senate. So contacting her in her office is helpful. Two, on the VSOs have been supportive of the Mission Act and a lot of stuff that's really devastating to the VS to the VA. Right now, they're getting a bit leery. If you're involved in any other VSOs, DAV, Legion, VFW, whatever, be helpful to talk to people and try to get them, let them know what's going on. Especially the firing of staff and how many of them are veterans is getting their attention at this point. And we may disabled American Veterans, DAV, has been the most supportive of the VA of all the big VSOs, but they tend to go along with the other ones as well. A lot of it is they want to continue to have a seat at the table. And if they're not in agreement, they're not going to be listened to. But they're beginning to see the light a bit, and we need to push that.
Jarlis, I see this message
Ah, there
from.
was one more thing.
Go
It's a
ahead.
good time to write letters to the editor. Jeff and I have both had letters within the last month get published because there is so much interest right now. It's a good time to write letters to the editor.
Notice that Will put in a comment. Appears that TriWest has been guilty of fraud and abuse. Maybe Doge should pay them a visit. I would agree. But that ain't going to happen. Of course, we know that. All right. Any other questions or comments, Mike?
Yeah, would you, Arliss or Jeff or Bruce, send to either to the chapter or to Dan or one of our contacts here in the chapter copies of a op-ed or letters to the editor, so that we could use as a guide for. We'll certainly do that. We've got actually, in addition to Patty Murray, we've got a good other representative here, Pramila Jayapal, who's a very aware and progressive congressional representative. But thank you, all of you, for very professional and informative presentations. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And the senator and the representative are definitely on our radar. I'm already in the process of trying to set up a meeting when we go the last week in April to DC, hopefully to meet with her chief of staff. And I just held a Zoom meeting with Representative Jayapal just yesterday.
Jeff, well, go ahead, Arles. Okay.
If
What?
anybody is a bit more motivated, we like to hold Zoom meetings with it's usually with staffers. We rarely see the member of Congress, but that's okay because staffers are the ones that you feed information to. And we try to set up relationships so we can keep an ongoing relationship going and feed them information and get information back from them. So if anybody is willing to set up a Zoom meeting with your congressional rep, let us know and we'll be happy to set it up and do the meeting with you.
That's great.
Bruce, you had
I have a
something?
question.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kim Hunter here.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot of the executive orders and all of the draconian budget cuts and layoffs. They're getting a lot of blowback from the courts, the administration, because you're not supposed to be able to undo by executive fiat a legislative policies, at least not so easily. To what extent are the funding position, the positions and the policies as far as administration of benefits and what qualifies and what doesn't, protected by legislation? And then might there be some relief in the courts from some of the actions that the executive branch is undertaking?
I can only speak from my perspective, and that is we don't know. Trump is pushing the boundary of the three branches of this nation in a way that really hasn't been pushed quite as much in past times. And so we don't know whether Congress or the courts are going to take a stand. Certainly, I think at this particular point, it'll have to be the courts. And there has been, you know, as you indicate, there have been decisions and what have you. But it's a matter of time. Therefore, one of the things that we would encourage you, as you and others, is to contact certainly your representatives and senators and indicate your concern about this. And but in terms of how you can influence the courts, no idea.
Okay.
AFGE has several suits that are in the courts right now about who can get fired and who can't get fired. What the outcome of them is going to be, I don't know. I think it was yesterday or the day before, Tammy Duckworth, there have been hearings in the Senate, and she sent a letter to Collins and Trump demanding specific information. I don't know if Patty Murray signed on to that or not. I only saw her name and Tina Smith, but there could have been more names and I don't know. I can send a link to that article and you might ask, some of you might ask, have you signed on to this letter yet or not? Or, you know, what are you doing? I'll send that article to Dan probably, and he can send it out to the rest of you.
Great. How many of you
Thank
are
you.
Listening? How many of you are listening? Have seen that article or read it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, there's so many. You know, they
okay.
Go on almost
okay.
Hourly. It's
okay.
Hard to keep track.
Yeah. No, it is.
Both vets and common defense are both establishing funds to challenge these things in court. I mean, I get information all the time, so. If you're not a member of Common Defense, so you don't look at Vote Vets or you're interested in that, those are both pretty good sources. Common Defense has a very large membership and much larger than VFP, much younger veterans generally than we have. So the point we've tried to make to Common Defense is for guys, for people our age mostly, I think there's one younger person on here I saw, the demise of the VA is not going to have the kind of impact it's going to have on post 9/11 veterans. You know, so it took decades for us to understand what Agent Orange did to Vietnam veterans and to the people who live in Vietnam. It's going to take a long time to understand the real impact of traumatic brain injuries and burn pits. If the VA disappears and doesn't track what's going on, like the Agent Orange Registry did for us, if the VA disappears and doesn't track that and doesn't do research on it, these younger people, men and women, are just going to be SOL. There's going to be nobody there. So if you're a veteran, and I had a bypass surgery, and so if I saw a private sector doctor, he or she wouldn't know to ask me, hey, were you in Vietnam? Were you exposed to Agent Orange? But if you see a VA doctor, they've got your record right there, and they'll tell you that, you know, you may be entitled to service connection for this condition. If you have prostate cancer, you may be entitled to service connection. So it's really, you know, to try to get younger veterans to understand how important the VA is going to be to them when they reach middle age and older age. And if it disappears, there isn't going to be the one entity that's dedicated to their health care is not going to be there anymore. And so Common Defense, which has a younger, much membership, can be a key ally in our struggle.
Let me take this moment to respond to Barbara's question in or statement in chat. She says big university medical teaching programs around the country, like the U of Washington, depend on the VA as teaching institutions. They should enter this fight and lend their influence to wait, but the VA provides so much health care in the US that's not acknowledged, like it's invisible labor. Please comment. Bruce, you wanna?
Well, yeah, 70% of all doctors in this country receive some training in the VA. And in fact, and I can't remember it might be the Association of Medical Colleges, but they have expressed their opinion to Congress more than once that the medical education training program in this country can't survive without the VA. You know, as I worked in at Birmingham, Lexington, Kentucky, and Denver, which are highly affiliated facilities. And so we had a number of residents on there who were paid by the VA, who were residents from the medical school, and they get their training at the VA. And at a highly affiliated place, doctors and patients go back and forth. So it's really essential both to the patients and to the doctors. So they have done that, but they could do more. I guess they can encourage that. The other thing, I don't know, Arliss mentioned the missions of the VA. The VA's research program is second only to the National Institutes of Health in size and scope. Not many people know that. And it's not just research from the VA benefits everybody in this country, not just veterans. Arliss mentioned some of the things that have come out of VA research. It also has as its fourth mission a backup in case of national emergencies. And the VA did a lot during the COVID pandemic to help out hospitals that were understaffed. Those are things that will be lost if the VA is gone. And personally, we won't get them back if they're lost. And I think the American public will suffer. I tell people, if you had any idea what it was like to be a patient at a VA hospital and get the kind of holistic care that veterans get from the VA, you would say, why don't we all get this? We spend more on health care than any other country in the world. Our outcomes are middling or worse than other developed countries. For what do we get for all this money we spend? And why can't we all have a system like the VA where we get complete health care, where we don't have to go to all kinds of different specialists, where we can actually get in, have people take care of us? It would really be a great model for a national health care system.
Okay.
That answer your question? Okay. Good. All right. Any other questions?
No.
Yeah, Dan?
No. Do you know of any organization or vets organization that's trying to coordinate a full national response for vets and the unions involved, the scientists, to protest what's happening? It seems like, going to our members of Congress, sure, that's going to help a little bit, but unless vets and the unions who work at these facilities get out in the streets, I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to affect change. Do you know of anybody trying to do that? I mean, VFP, like you say, is a small organization, but there are some big ones, VVA and Common Defense, like you mentioned, but.
I don't think there's an overall coordinated effort yet. There's a lot of people working on it. In VHPI, we've been trying to make alliances with Common Defense, Plowshares, and AFGE. We've had some limited success, but I don't know, unless Arnold Jeff does, I don't know of an overall coordinated effort. I think it's more like the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement in the 70s. There was no overarching thing, but there are a lot of people essentially doing the same thing. It does seem to me there's a lot of interest now, and we certainly get a lot more emails from people in organizations who are interested in this process. So I'm hoping it will coalesce around a couple of groups who will really be strong on it, but there is a lot of interest in it.
I would encourage you also to contact, the AFGE and SI, what is it, the SIEU,
SEIU.
SEIU, in your area. I know that here in Minneapolis, AFGE is organizing, and in other places. So coordinating this across a large area or across the country, I don't know anybody that's doing that yet. But there are things going on in the local areas, and the unions, they're up in arms since they're losing their jobs. So you might contact them and find out what's going on, at least locally.
I'm not aware of an overall organization. As Bruce was saying,
I need it, I agree.
in some ways we're in the early stages. If this keeps up, this kind of attack and so forth, eventually something will probably come about. Just as with past campaigns, civil rights or whatever, I would say that that we need to. Oh, there's another union, and I believe it is a National Federation,
Federal employees.
Federal Employees, that appears. We met with them. They appear to be pretty active. And so, if I don't know if out there in Seattle you have connections with them, that's another union, national union, that might be of interest. Mike, did you had your hand up?
Yeah, I have. I sent an email trying to co contact our new AFGE president here locally. No response from that. I suggested that we get together with them and do something that we did in the past, which was publicly demonstrate outside of the Beacon Hill VA, which is a large VA here in Seattle. Save our VA. We've got a big banner. We were also downtown at the VA demonstration. With that banner a few weeks ago. We plan on doing that again. And following up with what Dan says, I think having a physical presence on the street raising these issues is very, very important. Also, as per some of the remarks that were made, also these other organizations, including the which I'm a member of, VVA and also DAV, they don't want to get their feet dirty on the streets. They want to blah, blah, blah. I mean, I get their magazines and they mostly want to hand each other awards and have their little glossy papers and that sort of thing. But to get some publicity and also inform veterans who are coming in and out of the VA with leaflets and that sort of thing and seeing a banner is very, very important. I think the letters to the editor is a good thing, but that's one of the sort of tripods of protests or awareness is to have a public sort of presence to this raising awareness of this issue, and you've got to have this street presence. We're going to go
I
ahead
would.
with this. We're going to go ahead with this with or without the AFGA. We were going to hopefully Barbara was the one who may gave me the contact here. If you can give me the phone number for this guy, I'll call him again, or we'll call him.
I want to say that our local VA AFGE, they are it's like in crisis mode, trying to understand who's laid off. They are not being management is not telling them even who in the bargaining unit has been let go or is under covered by a RIF. It's a very challenging, extremely challenging time for the local, and I expect it is in Minneapolis, VFGE locals and across the country.
Way
Yeah,
in Minneapolis.
our
I would
AFGE here
fully
told
agree.
us that they were letting HR know that some people had gotten firing letters firing emails, and human resources didn't know.
Right.
So yeah, it's a mess.
And
yet,
Jeff, let me just
and yet,
one other.
locally, like I was saying, Barbara, locally here in Minneapolis, AFGE, we work with them, but in terms of them being super aggressive and so forth, it's not the case. Bruce, what do you have?
No, I was going to say on protests, the research I've seen shows that the second most read item in the local newspaper, letters to the editor following the first is a sports page. So letters to editors can be effective. And I've written a couple that are published locally. So in addition to what Jeff and Arlo send, I'll send copies of the ones that I wrote for people to look at to see if they think they're valuable.
Thank you.
Now
Thank you,
also
Bruce.
have a trifold, just sort of
Yeah.
about the VCCP, the VA in general, what the problems are. If you want copies of it, let us know and we can send them to you. We leave it at the VA. We can't officially table at the VA, at least not in our VA. We get a negative on that. But we leave it in waiting areas, distributed to people. How much you're willing to talk, you can offer it to people, but otherwise just leave it in on tables in the cafeteria and in the waiting area. And if you want us to send us you some copies, we can do that.
Just let us know. Chances are you're not going to be interested in this, but we do have Save Our VA bumper stickers. So if you want to pay the freight to get some copies of that, let us know as well.
Well, we actually have a bunch of those.
Oh, good.
So
Excellent.
anybody in the chapter wants one for their vehicle or
Excellent. Excellent.
place,
Okay.
we've got them here.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
So thanks for the presentation from these three people and the input from the Veterans for Peace on the meeting. This is Mike Diedrich closing out this VFP 92 Daniel Ellsberg Chapter Radio Show, broadcast on KODX 96.9. Thank you.